You and I have had multiple conversations about this, about what to expect if it was true that OpenAI was going to be incorporated into the OSs, both iOS, macOS, iPadOS, etc. And for anybody new to listening to this, disclosure, I worked with OpenAI up until last year. I've been there from 2020 and worked across the company a lot of different things. I had no prior knowledge of anything involved with Apple, so let me make that clear that anything I talked about here or elsewhere was entirely speculation on my part. But in our conversations, one of the things that we both knew is Apple Watchers, people have been following Apple since the last century, is there are things that Apple is very, very specific about, and one of that comes down to not just being secure and trust, but actually taking that really seriously. Privacy is a very big issue for this. And some people hand wave that away, but the thing I call attention to is back when there was the San Bernardino shooting and the federal government wanted to hack the iPhones of the people involved with that, Apple refused. And they took a tremendous amount of heat for doing that, but that was a matter of principle for them. And I think that you realized a lot about that company at that moment in time when they could have caved, they could have said no, but they made it a point to say, hey, we designed this stuff not to be hackable. We designed this stuff to prevent that. And we don't want to get into the business of trying to hack this stuff other than trying to figure out how the weaknesses are, because then these things are less safe. And that's hard for people to understand. But if you look at it from an InfoSec point of view and realize that state actors, China, Russia, other countries, are actively trying to penetrate American systems all the time and are everybody's systems, and we're trying to do it to theirs, that means that these things aren't as secure as we may think they are, and you want a company that's really trying to make them more secure and not just tell you they are. So Apple takes that seriously. When it comes to the AI announcements, as you know, when you use a service like ChatGPT, your data goes from your device and then it goes to the cloud where it's going to get processed. And by the nature of it, unlike a messaging app where if I send you a message, it gets encrypted on my device and it gets sent encrypted through the interwebs to your device where it's decrypted, you can't open that up in the middle and look at it if you're using proper on-device encryption. But if I want to have an AI system help me write an essay, I have to send that text to the cloud and to a server there and have it process that. Now, you can go through a lot of efforts to try to make sure that it's going to be secure. And there are some technical ways in which you could, in theory, build AI models that kind of like work with encrypted data. But even then, it's a little bit iffy. And that's not where we are right now. You have to send that to a server to be processed. The same with images, anything else like that. That any kind of data that needs to be processed in the cloud, in theory, could be viewable or usable. And with AI, people get nervous because they're worried about AI training. And while a company like OpenAI has very clear policies on what they do and don't trade on, maybe people don't know where to look at that, or people aren't aware of it. Or you take a company like Meta, which makes you basically have to, jump through five hoops, write a little note, put it in the mayonnaise jar in your backyard to get out of having your data trained on. And it's not just a point of view where people worry about it from a personal privacy point of view. You have people in companies working on IP or working with other people's information, and that's super critical, because if I'm, working with you, partner with you on a project, and it's a secret project, I need to tell you with confidence that data is not going to be trained elsewhere, is going to be used for something else. So these are the considerations Apple had to take into account, because they are a very privacy-forward company. And when you're talking about using things in the cloud, how do you rectify that? Not just on the individual level, but from a business point of view, because remember, iPhones are used in millions of businesses across the world.
And so governments.
The solution, what's that?
And governments.
Yeah, absolutely. And the solution we figured that Apple was probably going to do was do a lot of on-device stuff, do as much on-device as they possibly could, then with the option to go to the cloud, which is what they did. And they, they brought it down in the demonstration to the point of view, if Siri says, hey, this is a big task, ChatGPT would be good for it, I need your permission to send this to ChatGPT. And I have a feeling that there will be a control where you can choose to just say, always let it do that. But I think that by default, it's going to ask you for permission to it, because Apple doesn't want to be in a position where, somebody working on Disney IP, talking about some new theme park or something like that, finds out they've been sending it to OpenAI, even though it's not going to get trained on there. It still could create a problem.
So Craig Federighi made a big point spelling out all of that, specifically some of the issues with you don't know, even if you trust a company, you don't know whether or not leadership's going to change. You don't know whether or not everything is exactly how they believe that it is. And that is where they've siloed Apple intelligence. So I want to ask you some questions about how this sort of stuff is put together, because this is the two things that came to my mind with the Apple intelligence features were, A, I wonder how long it's going to take me to update this OS and how much it is going to have to train, you know, whatever's happening on device will have to train on the data that is on device, especially as it's pulling things from photos and notes and all this other stuff. It's going to make it really, really functional. And two, how small these models are to be able to run on the hardware that we have, because I think that's been a fascinating thing that's happened over the last few, you know, months, really in the last year, is just to see really agile, really valuable models that can do really interesting things like what we're seeing here.
So it's going to be interesting to see what capabilities they are going to do will be purely on device, because we talked about Apple, Siri, and how they would interact with something like ChatGPT. But for other systems, you know, speech recognition, things like this, these have been done on device and in cloud. So these things previously have been done on in cloud as well. And how many of these features are going to be in, on cloud? Because they went out of their way to talk about Apple Silicon to Apple Silicon and back and forth, which can be a little bit sort of hand-wavy because in theory, you know, it will go from your device to their thing. So a number of those features that you may have seen aren't going to be need don't need ChatGPT for, but they might be using Apple servers for.
Yes.
So that we're going to have to figure out where that is. You know, this week it is, you know, it is a developers conference, so we're going to be getting more announcements as they're going to talk about the features and what's exposed there. As far as how long it takes for it to be useful for it to train on that, they talked about on device. They used the thing called semantic understanding, and what that is it's what we call embedding search or vector search, where basically you create fuzzy representations of your data. And that's been there. Apple's had their own embeddings models inside of their apps for a long time. They were horrible and not very efficient, but there's been a lot of improvements in that. I use them because I was trying to build on-device stuff. You know, I put, you know, a GPT-3 scale model on an iPhone back like 4 years ago. It wasn't GPT-3, but a model like that. And you know, which is crash, you know, because the neural engine would do one prompt and then give up. But, you know, you try to push the limits of that, but we're 4 years later and the hardware is much better. So you can do a lot of really cool on-device stuff, embedding search, things like that. And that means like, yeah, doing those fuzzy searches. How long will it take before it starts to understand your documents and this? It's going to be very interesting, because I think that they talked a lot about we will be rolling out features, meaning they showed a bunch of things that I don't think are going to be available on day one. I think some of these things are going to take longer. A lot of what I saw is very aspirational. Some of these things I think were, you know, will be there available. But when you talk about the idea of something that understands your data and everything else around the throughout the device, there are two things that happen. One is it can take a while for it to, you know, you have enough data for it to be able to do something useful, like, you know, understand, you know, who your contacts are, whatever. You also get to another side of that where you get bloat, where you get so much stuff and so noisy, you have to figure out how you handle that. When that's one of the things that's going on in ChatGPT, because ChatGPT now you can have memory enabled. And what memory does is it can go through previous chats and try to figure out what's relevant and surface that and put it in there. I think that in the beginning, they're going to just focus on, you know, who are your frequent contacts, who are your last 20 messages. And that's one of the things that you'll start to realize that you'll be like, why did it work with this and not with this? Because, oh, it only stores the last 10 messages. It doesn't tell you that, because over time they might increase it.
I think you can kind of sort the announcements into a couple different buckets. One of them are what we've kind of wanted for a very long time, which is to make Siri useful. They have this voice assistant. It has access to all of my most relevant data, and yet it is nearly useless for anything other than transcribing a text message or asking what the weather is going to be. Pretty much anything else that you want to do with it is very, very frustrating, if not non-existent. Now, at least there is the context there. It'll be able to not choke on a compound sentence or you changing your mind halfway through as you clear a brain fog. There's that. And then there's the writing side of it and the summarization stuff. I don't know how much I was in love with their design decisions on summarization, but I wonder how much of all of that is on device and how much of that they're going to have to ping their own clouds for.
You can do a lot with some of the smaller things. You know, they talk about intents, you know, the idea of Apple Intents as a system for that. And you can basically kind of do intents through embeddings. And think of embeddings as just a fuzzy representation. So if you say, you know, ice cream would be food. If I say, and, you know, a car could be transportation. If I want something to eat, an AI model, you know, an AI embedding would find a closer match to ice cream than that. It's literally taking one thing and comparing them to something else using matrix multiplication. But the point is you can do a lot by just taking some of the actions in the thing and putting them in the embedding space and say, you know, play me some music, you know, by so-and-so. Well, it'd be like, oh, well, we think the first part of this is would be, you know, involve an app. So I'm like, oh, you mean open, you know, Apple Music, you know, oh, go search for this person. So you can do a lot of that on device. You can do a ton of things by just being very clever about how you use that. And because if you're defining these things there. Now, a thing I'm going to point out that Apple made the point of saying they're going to have other AI models available. And I think that's a smart choice. I'm sure they're going to do it because there's other capable models. We knew that they reportedly been talking to Google. It would have shocked the hell out of me if they'd actually made a deal if it was powered by Google, because that is literally gives people no more reason to buy an iPhone. And Anthropic's got capable system stuff. I think that could be true, but I'll tell you, here's going to be the challenge. OpenAI is taking heat for doing things like, there was a while ago, they had a thing called functions, which prior to in ChatGPT, they had the idea that you could create kind of a function and it would pull up a function and try to do a thing. That lasted like a few months and then it went away. Because it was just tricky, it wasn't quite there. So then they came out with GPTs. GPTs are poorly understood. People look at GPTs thinking that it was supposed to be the new app store. The idea that like, oh, I'm going to go buy a bunch of GPTs for this stuff. What GPTs really are is internal tools, things that you find very useful for that. And you find a company, there was a report came out, Moderna has something like 750 internal GPTs that they're using across all their teams. And that could mean a data scientist might have created a GPT to help them reformat data into a table. You know, somebody else who might be doing chemical compounds might have created an index of chemical compounds to do a search for this. And you can come up with these really specialized tools. But the point is that OpenAI has been very, very fast moving in the space of tool use and function calling, that is having the AI have the ability to say, oh, I need to search the web for this, or I need to do this for that, and putting that into the base model, that I think that it's going to be hard for other companies if they're trying to put their AI into the iPhone to be able to kind of match sort of like where, how deeply rooted the thing they said, which got one line, you will be able to connect your ChatGPT account to Siri.
Yes. So that, I assume, will be a settings level situation where you can do things that come along with your paid ChatGPT membership, just native on the phone.
And that tells you, like, right now they have uploading documents and all these other capabilities that are there. And as they increase the capabilities in ChatGPT, you're basically going to be putting that at system level, which is a thing. I've said that I don't know what company is going to make my next phone. I just know that it's going to have ChatGPT at the base level. And,
yeah.
Well, thank you. It's going to be an iPhone. And that's going to be a very, very interesting sort of space to see that kind of that cooperation there. Now, you know, the argument could be that they're going to just work with OpenAI for as long as it's useful and then open up other partners and eventually completely go standalone with their own products and maybe just, you know, have secondary offerings that people don't need to use as much. It's probably the plan. You know, how will that play out? It's hard to know.
Would you see this as analogous to like search engine? That there is, you know, Google pays quite a pretty penny to be the dominant and default search engine. Is this the introduction of that kind of role for an external GPT solution?
Well, remember, the transaction goes the other way here, where Apple's paying OpenAI for the use of their models and their systems. So it's going to see, I think it's certainly going to be there is going to be, like, if you're using ChatGPT, by the way, in the iPhone, it's paid for by Apple. And if you have your own subscription, which I think that's an interesting sort of thing, is that they're going to be paying for that usage. So there is some very interesting relationship between Apple and OpenAI. It's probably an agreement to a certain amount of capacity, you know, the idea of like X amount of capacity and stuff. Apple can dial that up or dial that down and how often they recommend to use ChatGPT. ChatGPT also can use, you know, when I use ChatGPT with the API, like if I use it directly, it is super fast, lightning fast. If I go use it in the app, sometimes it's fast, sometimes it's not. Yeah. So what they're doing is, you know, basically saying, is a 1 second delay here okay? Do I have to do streaming? Do I have to do that? So there's a lot of really interesting things that take place there. As far as the nature of the relationships, you know, it's right now the challenge is these models are differently abled, and Claude Opus is a very capable model, really good. Gemini 1.5 is a very capable model. GPT-4o is the leader, and clearly the leader on that in capabilities. And I would say that sometimes you might find something that has maybe a little bit better there, but if you look at the leadership, like GPT-4 is really substantially better. And that's, you know, kind of telling. It just shows you how far ahead OpenAI is in their ability to sort of create new stuff. And that's not their next generation model. That's basically taking a lot of what they learned from GPT-4o and building a better version of that. If you plug in a different model, are you going to get different behaviors? You know, is it going to behave in a different way than you expect it? And GPT-4o also is extremely, it's very price efficient for that class of model. If you want to go for just a faster getting something done models, Claude Haiku and Gemini 1.5 Flash, very good and very, very cheap to run. And they just take less computer space to it. So that's going to be interesting to see is that, you know, other offerings, you know, how I think it's still, they're still figuring out how that's going to, you know, how they're going to work that in. Do you need GPT-4 for every task, et cetera?
I do also think that there's a big question on exactly how differentiated all this stuff is. And that's something that the more I sat with the announcement, the more beyond their presentation, as you exit the Apple reality distortion field, you're like, okay, well, when am I using Apple Intelligence to summarize my emails, and when am I using ChatGPT? I assume I'll probably just use ChatGPT more than Apple, unless Apple is significantly faster. Obviously, these are all things that we're going to have to figure out as we go along. And in low reception areas, I might defer to something that's being done on device. But I don't know. I don't know exactly what the number one things that you're going to use in this ecosystem beyond the one thing that I think, again, everybody's probably the most excited about is just Siri being smart in a way that it hasn't been.
Yeah, it felt a lot like they weren't doing a ground up new Siri, which I think they probably will at some point. I think the idea was that basically how do you use a better GPT model or any, you know, whatever model they're using to understand your intents and what you want to do and plug that still into the same Siri sort of system. So it looks like they're kind of piece by piece trying to do that. We didn't see, you know, the kind of interaction we saw at the OpenAI demo GPT-4o where you had a really engaging conversation. Something they did show, which I mentioned before, was there's going to have to be some sort of text app or some way to interact with Siri beyond just using voice stuff. And sure enough, you know, now you can send Siri
built in. Yeah. Double tap at the bottom. And now you can text Siri whatever you want,
which should have been there 10 years ago. That should probably have been there 10 years ago. And I think that
probably
the problem is that, and I would say that I don't know anybody on the Siri team. I don't know who worked on that. I don't know who's still there, whatever, but they've been following a lot of people building those voice assistants. The emphasis was voice. They got very over-indexed on voice. And so what happened was, on one hand, these devices don't feel like they've evolved very much in the last 10 years, which kind of is true. They have gotten better at certain kinds of precision of understanding clearly the words you said or picking up your voices in a background. And that was where a lot of the AI research went into, was just, we just have to understand what you said, figuring out what you need, we'll just use a simple bag of words, kind of like literally, like when you look at the methods they were using, they were just very basic. They weren't using anything GPT level to try to do any kind of comprehension to what you're trying to do, which is why you never really got, because a text thing, when you would start trying to write more complex text things. But I wish 10 years ago you could have just texted Siri to get it to do stuff in just natural language. I think it would be a way better product today because now voice is effectively solved. You look at the transcript output of, you know, Whisper from OpenAI, and better than human.